Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Wrestling and Whatever. I'm Mikey Dangerously. With me, as always, the co-host with the co-most, Jay Glow. How you doing there, Jay Glow?
Hiya!
It sounds like we are in a bit of a, I would call it a turbulence flight, if you will, because we're talking about Full Gear. No, I don't know. I don't know how to even...
Yeah, I don't know how you promote that. We're in Full Gear here.
Yeah, I guess we could say that. We are in Full Gear because we're going to do the... It's going to be a nice little quick episode today.
Mr. Qualk used to say that too. Sorry to cut you off. But
quick episode?
Let's kick this into Full Gear.
Oh,
I missed that, man.
But we're going to talk about the pay-per-view that just happened this past Saturday. Now, me not being too familiar with the product, but I'm getting there because I'm watching it as it's progressed here. Over the years, I mean, I would say I wasn't one that jumped on it at the first sale of this promotion, but I know for a fact you did, right? You watched the first episode.
Yeah, the majority of it, yep.
Yeah, and you kind of kept up with the product for the most part. Do they generally do pay-per-views on Saturday?
Yeah. Okay. Generally, Saturday pay-per-views, I believe they'll do... I think the last Sunday pay-per-view, I could be wrong, was Revolution.
Okay. Hey, that's a good thing in it of itself, if you think about it, as a wrestling promotion, throwing something on a Saturday. And
right.
It gives people, you know, that have to go to work normal 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, they have that Sunday to rest. Or, you
right.
know, football, anything else, any other major sport that they may want to actually, like, watch as well. It's not going to be completely taken over by wrestling on that Sunday.
Right. And what I think, too, is Saturday is a lot of the time, like you just said, a lot of people will have work the following days. But another thing that they're doing is they're seeing what other companies are doing well, are having events like that on Saturday nights. For example, like the UFC, their pay-per-views are usually Saturday nights, and football games as well. Right. So after they're done watching football for the majority of the day, watching their Penn State games or their Notre Dame games, they could go straight to AEW afterwards. So it's, like I said, AEW does a lot of things right. When it comes to doing different stuff, doing stuff that's not the norm,
right.
and situations like that, it's a win. It's a win-win, really, when you think about it. You can't lose more people for your pay-per-view if you have it on a day earlier. I mean, look at WrestleMania, for example, them going two nights now. I think that's another reason why they did that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with WWE doing with the WrestleManias, and I don't know if they are going to do that with the four-pillared pay-per-views. When I say four, I would say what we would say WrestleMania, Survivor Series, Royal Rumble, and SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm.
Those wouldn't eventually evolve into two-night affairs, but it wouldn't be past them to do that, especially for a Royal Rumble.
Yeah,
you could do the men's Royal Rumble the first night, the Saturday, and then on Sunday you could finish it with the women's, or vice versa.
So right,
throwing those are big stipulation matches that you wanna be excited for, but then you don't also want your audience to get blown out. And I think AEW is doing it right by not really blowing out their audience, if you know what I mean. Like, these matches that happened on this pay-per-view, they were a bit longer
than
your traditional match, but they weren't like, I don't know, they weren't like, it wasn't like, oh, when's this gonna end type thing either, you know what I mean? That's how I got out of it. I don't know how you felt with the pay-per-views, the matches, some of the matches, if not with this pay-per-view, but with previous pay-per-views, if you could attest that you were sitting there with your thumb up your ass, or if you were like, oh no, I'm invested, I want to see how this goes.
See, that's the thing with the AEW pay-per-views. I've been very invested nowadays with that, because it's a growing product that I think is doing great things. I mean, they brought one of my favorite guys to watch in the last couple of years, that being CM Punk, back, which I never thought he would be back. But another thing that they're doing well is they're doing different things, and they're thinking outside the box. And I know a lot of people talk a lot of shit on it. Like one of our guys that we had on the show a couple months back, Bob Cook. I like how Bob, sometimes when he's online, he'll try to get people fired up about WWE and AEW. I feel like he does it just for shits and giggles, but he's very sour when it comes to certain products and whatnot. But a few things that I noticed that AEW does well is their pay-per-views. Their pay-per-views, granted, they're doing them, what, four times a year, and they're doing their shows. They have the Mondays for, like, the Dark and the Elevations, and then they have the Dynamites and the Rampages now. But one thing that AEW does really well is the hyping up their pay-per-views. They go with an old school type of formula that allows them to be creative and set up storylines, which WWE, I feel like, they don't set up storylines good anymore. No. Like, they're always just so, like, spontaneous and not interesting. Even though I know the fan base sometimes really just, they're not the brightest tools in the shed or the sharpest tools in the shed. But they're just a lot of the audience is just, their attention span's minimal. But us, I could speak for both of us, and including Ben, who's unfortunately not on the show tonight. We like a story to be told.
Right.
So AEW, I feel like they've been doing that a lot. And going into this pay-per-view, our main event, the main event was built up for a while because of just what had happened in the past. So I thought it was a really good pay-per-view. And unfortunately, to add on to what you had mentioned about sticking the thumb up your ass and wondering what's going to happen next, like, you know, sitting there watching pay-per-view, getting bored, I unfortunately had a very long day that day, so I passed out in between a few matches. But when I awoken, because of the loudness of the pay-per-view, which was fantastic, I was back into it. But it was just one of those things where I was so tired from that day of traveling that I needed baby boy needed his rest.
Would you say though that if this was a WWE pay-per-view on in the background, you would have fallen asleep and you probably wouldn't have woken up again?
I would have fallen asleep and woken up the next day.
Yeah.
With my phone dead.
Yeah.
Because it would have kept replaying it and I would have still stayed asleep.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a little litmus test there, if you think about it, of how your attention span is for one product's pay-per-view versus another. But let's get into Full Gear here. We had a couple of matches. Our opening match, I'm going to butcher these names. Shida?
Hikaru Shida and Thunder Rosa. They defeated Jamie Hayter and Nyla Rose via pinfall.
Now that was a pre-match match.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did not see that on the pay-per-view.
Well, Mikey, that match and MJF, which is the next match, those were pre-shows.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's surprising because I did. That's the first match I came in on was the MJF Darby Allin match. But okay.
But here's the thing, as we talk, we're going to go into these matches here. Mm-hmm. There are two matches that they didn't even have to write pre-show onto it. They were great matches. Like the AEW, like, they could say the whole show was a pre-show and it would still be good.
I never understood that for any product, though, for WWE or for AEW, why they need to have pre-show matches, why they just can't say this is just on the pay-per-view. Right. Because for WWE, when they do that and they say they put a title on the line in the opening bout, I feel, from my standpoint, I feel like it detracts that value of the belt if they put the tag belts on the line in the opening belt for WWE. It's like, well, it didn't get in for the pay-per-view and you're just going to say this was on the kickoff show, you know?
Right.
There's a lot of like negative terminology that I pick up that isn't necessarily probably meant to be negative, but I don't feel like negative kickoff seems like a negative connotation in my mind. And then you said pre-show seems like a negative connotation for me in my mind. Just make it the pay-per-view, like you said. It wasn't detracting from the pay-per-view at all. This match, I didn't catch, but, you know, I'm sure they did as a heck of a job. Did you see any of it?
I saw the bits and pieces of this. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I unfortunately was out before when this started. Mm-hmm. I wasn't home. But I was able to listen to some parts. But I'll tell you what, Mikey, Thunder Rosa is slowly but surely becoming one of my favorite women's wrestlers to watch because she's just so talented in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Then she has that I want to say this in the most positive way possible and not be racially imbalanced towards it, but she gives me that Tatanka feel. But Tatanka with a personality.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, she gives you that wilderness type of thing with the face paint and just the way she dresses.
Mm-hmm.
Thunder Rose is really, really, really good in the ring. And she could tell a story. That's why I said in the last episode we had here, I would absolutely love if they had a run back with her and Britt Baker. Oh, okay. That's the match I want to see again. I want to see it on a pay-per-view, though. And I want to see it exactly how it was before, but I want them to take it up a step higher because, once again, that's what the women's division needs. That because if they kept doing that or make it, they can make this Thunder Rosa Britt Baker thing like a Raven Tommy Dreamer type of thing, in my opinion.
Do you think that AEW's influx of talent is going to diminish some of the other wrestlers that are already on the brand?
No.
No? Okay. Okay.
A lot of people do.
Yeah. No, and I think it's okay to have a nice, rich roster if you can afford it in WWE's case, which I don't see how WWE can't afford it. But with AEW, like, it seems like they're getting a lot of people, and I feel like it's growing, and it's causing different, things to happen. Like, the way I said they should do wrestling, if wrestling has to be a whole year thing, they should have, like, an A series versus like a B series, like the like an A roster should be in during their prime season, and then a B roster could come in to replace the A roster so that the A roster isn't getting tired, and but like vice versa. But then you could
it's like a SmackDown versus Raw,
kind of. But like, but what I mean is you don't see for like 6 months out of the year you would not see that A roster because the B roster would be there, and then you know then if you wanted somebody from the B roster to sacrifice their 6 months off or whatever, they could come on.
Right.
And then they could, then you could kind of mix and match that way. No, like with SmackDown versus Raw kind of didn't work too well because they're not getting time off. They're still running them. Mm-hmm. But like, I feel like there should be like a minor league, major league, like, I don't know, like with baseball or something.
No, that's a good idea. Yeah.
So absolutely. Like, you're not tiring out the top guys. And then say Kenny Omega isn't on, screen for 6 months, you're not going to get tired of them either.
Right.
You know, and then, you know, when these people, it's not going to just be like a huge switch either. It's going to be gradually, like we'll start bringing back so-and-so and then we'll, you know, but like, it's just one of those things where it's giving half the roster time to, you know, recuperate because I don't care who you are, man, woman, child, you can't put your body on the line that much for that long.
Nope. You'll get burned out.
Exactly. So like you just kind of like, you know, flip flop it a little bit.
Yep. I agree.
Because they have to know. I don't care if you're a huge wrestling fan and you watch it all the time, or if you're a novice and you watch it occasionally, they have to know that the boys in the back have to know when their ratings do get the highest, what Absolutely. Their peak time is. So that's when, you know, that's when you could start doing all that crazy shit if you wanted to. But for the most part, there's a lull. There is a lull. I don't care who you are. It just kind of gets like, you know, you're just doing shit.
Here's the thing, Mikey. Sorry to cut you off. I don't mean to. But no. So one of these things that they're doing, which I hope they're doing it well, and I hope they're doing it on purpose, but it's giving so many people, like Kenny Omega, we'll use him as an example. He's been on television every week. Mm-hmm. The Young Bucks, they've been on TV almost every week. There's a lot of these people like Nyla Rose that haven't been on TV all the time. Cody Rhodes has been on TV all the time. Malakai Black, so-so here and there, makes an appearance but then goes away. I like what they're doing there. I absolutely love what they're doing there. And I'm not sure how much these guys are getting paid. But I hope that has some sort of an incentive that, okay, so-and-so's not on TV all the time. This guy's not on TV all the time. Guys, go back. Think of something. Be creative. You have this creative control where you could think of some things. We'll go give it past us, and then we'll see what sounds good, what doesn't sound good. I'm not sure if that's what they do.
Right.
But what I like what they're doing, and I'm not sure, like I said, if they're doing this on purpose, but giving so many of these people all this time, and then boom. Pay-per-view comes, they either lose or they win. And let's say, for example, the Hangman Page Kenny Omega match, whoever wins or loses, they get some time off for a little bit. Right. And then we bring up so-and-so, XYZ. They're going to be the next people up. Like you said, the A and the B team. Kind of to not contradict what you said, but to kind of add on to it. The A and B team, the A team's on right now, but then the B team's going to take over for the next quarter of the year. Right. And then once that pay-per-view comes up, then and they seem like they have that influx of talent that could do that, that they, like, hey, guys, you're not on TV right now because so-and-so super hot right now, and we're going to keep riding that. And then once that burns out, we're not going to do what WWE does and, you know, push them down your throat. And if they don't work, then we release them. We'll just keep you here, and then we'll have an influx. Think of something. Reinvent yourself, or think of something you could do, and then maybe get that fire built up. Like, hey, for example, I'm going to throw another name out there. Brian Pillman Jr.
Right.
He might be on the C team right now. And we're just saying letters. We're not saying like, oh, C team, you guys are like mid-card, below mid-card.
Right. Yeah, no. I wasn't trying to do that either when I said
yeah, no, absolutely.
I was just saying there's a pool of talent over here, and there's a pool of talent over here. Let's right. use this talent for, like you said, the first quarter or first set of pay-per-views, and then they're getting a little tired. Let's slowly dabble in the second pool of roster mm-hmm. so that the first pool of roster can go away and then have a break. And like now you're saying, add something
yeah.
to the repertoire. Not so much JR mannerism, go home and learn a new hold, kid. But more so like, you're not, you know, we're not going to release you. We're not doing anything.
Yeah.
You know, go and
take a break.
Exactly. And then, you know, rekindle it.
Right.
And then come back. Because what ends up happening is, like you said, what WWE does, pushes them down their throat. And then it seems like it's in that CM Punk scenario, it seems like they do that as a detriment. But, oh, this guy's getting over? Okay, well, let's make him work through an illness and through
sickness.
Just, because that's what the crowd wants and this, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, nah. Like, be nice to your employers. You know?
Yeah.
Like, give them a break. You know, you don't have to do this. Like, yeah, I don't get the John Cena thing either. Like, it's never going over and people are loving it and you're just going to, like, keep sticking them down your throat. And it's like, maybe give him a break so he can, you know.
Come you wanted to go heel, too.
And that, too. Like, no. We're never going to do that. Like, no. CM Punk with that Eddie Kingston match, that would have been the perfect time for him to be a heel.
Yep.
Because people were on fire with this Eddie Kingston guy. And I'll be the first guy to admit it. Didn't even know who the guy was. Didn't even do any research. I sat there. He just looked like, you know, a hobo from whomever. But, you know, he was pretty
good. Wow.
I'll say it. I don't.
Anyone listen to this match, but you don't know who Eddie Kingston is, bro? You watch wrestling?
Apparently I don't, but.
One thing I wanted to add on to it, though, was with guys like, let's say, for example, I'll just throw him out there because of his stature within AEW, Kenny Omega. Mm-hmm. You have a guy like him, though. If you constantly have him out there, and yes, they'll say he's part of the A team, but we're pushing the B team up now to see, get their storylines going. If Kenny Omega's still hot, keep him out there.
Right.
Keep him going. Yeah. But if he's got something going on that people want to see, like, yeah, I know it's time for the B team, but hey, this guy has got what our business needs right now. We're going to keep him in. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, but if not, then, you know, but like I said, that's the way that the business, I think, used to run. Like, for example, Diesel, Kevin Nash, many interviews I listened to him, they didn't think he was going to put the title on him, because I know Sean was the one that they were always aiming to put on, but then Vince said, hey, Big Daddy Cole's hot right now, let's have him beat Bob Backlund at Madison Square Garden in like 8 seconds, and then win the title. And then next thing you know, the title's on him. Was it too early? From his interviews, he said, yeah, it might have been, but hey, I still went and I ran with it. So
right, and like that type of – if he waited, he probably would have not got the opportunity again.
No, because he was hot at the time.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like AEW is doing right now. They're doing everything – they have a lot of errors here and there, and there's a lot of flops in some of their shows. But hey, just like any business, you got to throw something to the wall that you might think is creative and see if it sticks. And I'll give AEW credit over WWE 100% more than this, because AEW stuff seems like, because maybe it's because they're a newer type of wrestling company, that we're more forgiving towards them for it.
Right.
I mean, yeah, granted, they had that one match where Chris Jericho went through a bunch of styrofoam or something it was.
Well, and the exploding ring.
And the exploding ring. Those were two flops. But hey, it's one thing that maybe if they're smart, they could go back and laugh about it and even laugh about it on live TV and be like, oh, yeah. But hey, at least we didn't do and then like pick up something stupid that WWE did. You know what I mean? Or just not talk about them at all and just say, "Oh yeah, your match is gonna be exciting as much as that exploding ring match that we had."
Right.
You know, or something like that. Poke fun at it, because people would love that. People love when stuff I can speak for myself. Mm-hmm. I love when they reference stuff that had happened back in the day and then make a joke about it.
Right. Yeah, me too.
Something about comedic relief in wrestling is what.
That's wrestling comedy. When they can go back and you get the in joke of a booking. You know what I mean?
It's exactly. Not
like finger poke of doom and they can throw that out there.
Oh, like, I remember that. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things like, oh, I remember that.
What are you gonna do? Hit me with a cattle prod and like that type of like throwaway gag. That could be funny, you know what I mean?
And that's what WWE was doing right for so long, which I mean, I could speak for both of us. We laughed our asses off at half the shit they did.
Yeah.
But it's like
the other issue that I think WWE is doing that AEW isn't doing is they get on that bandwagon and it's like too late, you know, when they're trying to push Cesaro. And now they're like, oh, why isn't everybody liking Cesaro? And it's like when he was coming out and doing his shit when he first came up, like that's when you do it. Mm-hmm. Like, you're doing it now and it's like, I don't know, no offense to the guy, but it's like you had him floundering for such a long time. You lost all stock in him. You know what I mean?
Yep.
AEW, I mean, Hangman Adam Page for the better part of this year was kind of floundering.
Mm-hmm.
And then like they kind of bookended it because it was the year before, a year ago, that pay-per-view, he was in a tag match with Kenny Omega.
Yep. Well, he was also injured too.
Right. But okay. I guess Cesaro was too, if you think about it.
Sometimes. He was. So mm-hmm. His shoulder.
So I guess, yeah, so I guess the injuries could have a thing to play with it.
But the injury kind of worked in Hangman's favor instead of Cesaro's, though, because when Cesaro came back, they just put him in pre-shows and in tag teams.
Right. But Hangman, they said, okay, let's keep going, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get back into the pay-per-view here. This was still – you're saying it was the pre-show, which was MJF versus Darby Allin?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, then we saw Darby Allin lose this match to MJF. And Matt, MJF is such an asshole. He's got to be one of the best heels.
Mm-hmm.
I've caught a few of his promos. He's great on the mic. And the heel aspect of just like when he wins, it's like, yeah, that's good. You know what I mean? Like, you got to hate him. But it's like, yeah, he said he was going to win the way he was going to win. Which his whole spiel during that match was he was going to beat Darby Allin with a simple wrestling move. And it was brass knucks, but the ref didn't see that. But it was a head scissor takedown. And he covered him. And it was 1, 2, 3. After the brass knucks, which again, the ref didn't see, but still, genius. Genius.
Genius storytelling in the ring.
Right. You had it's simple. It was so simple. It's like his whole MJF's whole spiel was I could beat Darby Allin with a simple wrestling move. In the match did not make Darby Allin look weak at all. It ended up making it look like it was a challenge to beat Darby Allin because he was throwing everything at MJF. Darby Allin was so much to the point where MJF thought, I'm not going to win this match. Here's an opening. I'm going to walk out and I'm going to grab a skateboard and I'm going to come back in and I'm going to say, hey, Darby, hit me with this. Come on, hit me with this. And then Darby Allin gets up and he starts to swing that skateboard and then he stops and he gives it back to the ref, says, I'm not going to do that. And the ref is distracted with the skateboard, putting it back for like, it seemed like 20 minutes. MJF pulls out the old brass knucks from the freaking trunks. Whacks him across the head.
With the dick sweat on it.
Exactly. With the dick sweat, man. And gives him that nice old head scissor takedown. 1, 2, 3. And ref's like, wow, okay. But see, he was still faint. Like, he still barely got out of that match because of his knee. His knee was injured. So, I don't know. I still think that's how you make someone go over and be, like, strong. Like, Darby Allin was strong in that match, you know?
Yep, so. And that's a win-win.
Right.
The way you have the heel win, dirty, and then you have the face just go out there and give it his all, and he could have won.
Right. They use managers correct in AEW versus WWE.
Absolutely.
I know, like with Don Callis at the last match, and you had Wardlow and MJF's associate come out, Sting's associate come out to kind of block interference out of that. And you had Arn Anderson's role in his. I didn't really catch the tag match too much with Tully Blanchard with FTR against the Lucha Brothers. Maybe Tully didn't have to do anything in that match, because there was like almost every team or every person did have a manager, but they also had different spots. It wasn't the same spot.
Mm-hmm.
But also the manager just wasn't out there. Nothing against Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman is cemented in WWE history as the best manager of all time.
In your mind.
But, you know, he starts to just, he's not, like, even Paul Bearer interfered. Jimmy Hart interfered. Heenan interfered. I think, like, Heyman, I get it. You know, Roman Reigns is the king of the hill or king of the castle or whatever you want to say. But I don't know. Managers have to get dirty. There has to be a reason for them to be out there. Roman's starting to be able to talk, getting on WWE, Roman's starting to be able to talk a little bit more. So then when does his stock kind of dry up if you're not going to use him for talking and he's just out there? You know what I mean? I hate to say that. But, like, you know, you have someone like, you know, you have your typical manager. Even the Dan Lambert. Like, that was that match, the Inner Circle match against America's team or whatever. That was your typical, like, manager match, you know? He gets, you know, because he was in the match. But, you know, like, even he got, you know, he was in the match, you know? Mm-hmm. So WWE doesn't do that anymore, you know? They don't let the people that aren't, like, your Eric Bischoff or, you know, Stephanie McMahon when she had a match against Vince, you know? You don't have, like, those matches anymore. It's just like, oh, they're not going to get hurt. They're not even doing anything. The managers are former wrestlers, and it's like, well, that makes –
exactly.
So, but anything you want to add to the MJF Darby Allin match?
No, just very well done match.
The next match was a match that I kind of skipped through just a little bit to the end. We had Lucha Brothers defeating FTR to retain the AEW Tag Team Championship. I mean, both teams, you know, it wasn't that it wasn't a compelling match to me. It was just, I don't know. Did you catch any of it?
I caught bits and pieces of it. Let me just throw this out there. Probably one of the best matches I've seen this year. Mm-hmm. Pay-per-view, regular show, pre-show. Best match I've seen this year was from the last AEW pay-per-view, All Out, with the Lucha Brothers and the Young Bucks. That might be my match of the year to watch because of just how it all played out. How it was, the story was told in the ring, the high spots, the low spots, just everything. It had everything you wanted in a match, in a tag team match specifically. Best tag team match in the last probably about 10 years. Wow. This was like the Hangover. The Lucha Brothers are
Cooper.
Exactly. The Lucha Brothers are very good. If not the most deserving guys with the tag team belts right now. This was like a match where it's like, okay, we're coming back down to earth from the last match we had in that cage. FTR, very good old school tag team esque type of team. I like FTR. Me too.
With Tully Blanchard, that music, it just feels like you're getting sucked into a different age of wrestling with them. Just with
it's like Tully and Arn.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where these guys, they're stagnant where they're at. FTR, mm-hmm. They'll eventually get somewhere, but it could be another thing here, Mikey, with how they are in reference to our A team, B team type of thing.
Right.
Yeah, they had a match at the pay per view. Yeah, these guys are really good still, but I feel like their time for anything like this is their time's coming.
Right,
time coming as in like they're not going to leave. But the fact where they're going to get their spot, it's going to come. They just have to be patient. But nothing, the best FTR match I've watched in the last maybe 8 years was probably, or when they were in NXT, was their tag team championship match at the NXT TakeOver. I believe it was Montreal.
Oh,
When they won the tag team championship match against, I think it was Gargano and Ciampa. I could be wrong.
Okay.
I could be wrong. I'm trying to remember because there's so many damn matches, but they that was a really good match that they had. Great finish, great storytelling, the whole entire show. That's when NXT was doing good shit. For in this type of an instance, it wasn't a bad match. It was a good match still, but it's just one of those things where like FTR is not hot right now.
Right.
Not saying that they're a bad tag team at all, but I just think that their time's coming where we're going to be like, holy shit, did you see what these guys did? They're another team that they could be hot right now if they do something completely outlandish and crazy, something that everyone's going to be talking about. Right. That's how these guys are. They're very good and arguably one of the best tag teams in wrestling today. But if they're that one, like, holy shit, what did they just do?
Yeah.
Type of thing, which that's a I feel is good coming.
Gimmick they have FTR, but it's also kind of like if you cheat, it's kind of like an easy gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not going out of your way so much. You're just kind of digging into a deeper well to be like, we're just gonna be the best technical wrestlers.
Right.
And then we're gonna bring it back to a time when wrestling was wrestling and men were men and blah blah blah. And it's like, yeah, well they had a whole like decade where they were doing that. And it's like you're just kind of pulling up from the past and you're here now. You're the only ones that are doing it.
Right.
But it's also like, you know, there's all these other, you know, you compare them to the super kick, the super clit.
Super clit.
Or, you know, or the Lucha Brothers. And it's like, well, yeah. You know, they're kind of there. But
there's so many tag teams right now. It's like, yeah. Who's going to get over most?
Right, right. And that's one thing that AEW is doing is they do have a lot of tag teams. And they could pull from that to make individual stars or make different factions or different things like that. I think we're used to the WWE's type style of faction or even old WCW factions where it was always one major faction and they kind of ruled the roost.
Right.
And then other factions, you know, maybe tried to come up to take them out, but in the end it was always Evolution. It was always D-Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like... You know, now this one, you kind of have the Inner Circle. You know, you have all these other ones that you just kind of have to be like, well, are we weeding them out or what are we doing? You know,
right.
It's either this match or the next match. I want to kind of break away just quickly. You've watched a lot of these pay-per-views and you've watched a lot of the programming. What is your take on this three-man booth, particularly for this pay-per-view? And are they always the same? Has it always been Tony Schiavone, Jim Ross, and Excalibur?
It has been. From the pay-per-views I've noticed, it's always been these three guys.
Okay.
I like them. Yeah. Excalibur is okay. He's that different voice that you have in there that you don't really hear as much anymore. Right. But... you have JR, you know, the voice of our childhood, and then same thing with Tony Schiavone. But here's the thing, though. Excalibur, I feel like, would get a warm presence if he went away for a little while because of how much, since AEW's really come out, we've heard him behind the booth for the majority of AEW's birth. So it's one of those things like when JR left.
Yeah.
WWE, and then he came back, how excited we were for him.
Right.
Even if it was Jerry the King who left and came back, or Michael Cole, if he was to leave and come back.
Right.
After hearing. So if you want to make Excalibur look good or be excited to listen to him, mm-hmm. is have somebody come in there and be an announcer and just be the shits.
Right.
And then have him come back and be like, oh my God. Excalibur, we could really like he wasn't annoying. Like we really enjoy listening to him, and he's just that stand-up guy that's just sitting out there giving it his all, and like everyone appreciates it. But he's like one of those guys too that if he goes away for a little while and comes back, they'll be excited to have him back.
I'm gonna do a technical standpoint. From a technical standpoint, from me personally, when I listen to this podcast, me, you, and Ben have three distinguished voices. I really think it's hard to know who's talking when we're talking. I think when I'm talking, like I'm talking right now, you know it's me. When you start talking, they're gonna be like, okay, now Johnny just chimed in. That's Johnny talking.
Right.
Ben picks up. Ben's got a unique voice. We all three of us have a unique voice. Unfortunately, I don't feel the same way between Excalibur and Tony Schiavone.
Really?
I think there was a match. It was either this one or so it was either this tag match or the next match it sounded like either Tony Schiavone or Excalibur were just talking as the same person back to each other. Like, to me, my ear is Tony Schiavone and Excalibur have that same voice. JR's voice is so distinguished. And so, like that's what I never understood when Vince had that gripe against that Southern draw. It's like, yeah, but it's unique. You know what I mean? It sounds different. You know what I mean? It doesn't sound right. like if you had, like, I don't know, Mike Adamly and, like, Corey Graves and, like, or no, not even Mike Adamly and Corey Graves. I'll be more Tom Phillips and Todd Grisham. Those two sound similar. Kind of look similar if you think about it.
Really? Yep.
So, like, I just feel like if they're gonna do that, you need, like, JR's voice just being the seasoned announcer. Tony Schiavone is fine, or Excalibur is fine. I wouldn't say both, but then you need, like, a Mark Henry, or, like, I would even go with a Chris Jericho if he's starting to get away from the right. wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I feel like there's too many. First of all, there's a 3-man booth. I get it. I think that's what we're in for nowadays. I think that's what we have to look forward to, is just 3 men in a booth. I if you go any more, I think it's too much.
Right. No, I agree.
I don't think we're comfortable with just two people trying to carry a 3 or 4 hour show. I get that. But I just, again, just from a technical standpoint, personally, me, there were times in that pay-per-view when I swear it sounded like Tony was just talking to himself. And I'm like, why is Tony calling, you know, like, I know.
Why is Tony talking to himself? Like, Stop talking to yourself.
It was just so strange. And if I'm the only one that gets that, I get it. If anybody here that's listening go, oh yeah, just, you know, let us know. Because I just feel like I might be the only one in this boat. But
no, I agree. There are some instances where they sound the same. And the same thing goes for UFC pay-per-views too. Mm. Some of the guys sound almost the same, except for, like, there's a fighter called Michael Bisping. Mm-hmm. He's got a man, I think he's from Scotland, I want to say. But you could tell
Irish accent, no.
Yeah, how you just said that right there, Mike, exactly how he sounds. So you know when he's talking, but there's sometimes where there's other fighters that sound like, you know, the guys that have been there for the longest time. So it's like, okay, who's talking?
Right. And that's what was throwing me off a little bit during the pay-per-view. I mean, I was watching the action, don't get me wrong, it was good, but, like, I would just pick it up and be like, why is Tony Schiavone talking to himself? It's just very strange. But let's get into the next match, which was also very strange. We had Bryan Danielson, which JR was calling him Daniel Bryan, but I'll tell you what, the name's stupid regardless. And I know that's probably his birth given name. You know, think of a new name, kid, because, you know, that's a hot take for me. Both Daniel Bryan and Bryan Danielson are stupid names.
And that's his name.
Right. But that's like my parents calling me Michael and my brother Nicholas. Those are stupid names for being so close to each other in the alphabet. Because we would get mixed up so many times. And I think it was the M and the N. I don't know. I feel like Michael and Nickel. I don't know. I feel like they're like
Nickel.
Nickel. And I just feel like they were the same name.
Nickel and Nickel.
So I don't know. If he's going to be the dragon, he should just change it again. I know that's what he's known for, though. But, and I know that's his name. But, and I'm giving JR a pass on that. He messed up a few times. But then he called out himself on that. And I felt like he got hard on himself for himself for that. And I'm like, just don't call attention to it. If you're in the moment and you're calling Daniel Bryan, boom, it's it. Like, that's it. Don't call
lawsuit.
No, I don't think it's even that. I just think JR is trying to get ahead of the self, ahead of the game. Then he's playing a game, and then it's like, dude, if you didn't bring it up, we're just getting we're getting into the match.
It was a good match.
It was a really good match. I really like Miro. Like, and here's the thing. I watched this pay-per-view 3 times. The second time I rewatched it with the missus because this was the one match she wanted to watch. She was like, oh, I heard Rusev and Daniel Bryan were having a match. I want to catch that one. I said, oh, okay. I was like, okay. And, you know, she was like watching it. And I was like, wow, okay. She likes Miro, though, too. Like, I think we both like Rusev. Like, just he was on he was on Total Divas. And he was just kind of stupid on that. It was stupid funny. And I don't know. It's just, you know. What are those things with him just being a wrestler and shit like that? And his like God complex thing is just really funny on this one. Like,
right.
And just like, you could tell, I feel like he's writing for himself.
Right.
If there are no quote unquote writers, I feel like he's like they're throwing the script out the window and he's just going full force with himself.
And I think personally, I think this was the match of the night for me because of just how like match of the night is in story, like wrestling match.
Right.
How the match was told in the ring, how everything was done between this and the Kenny Omega match were probably the two best storytelling matches, in my opinion.
Right. I thought you're going back really quick. I think my favorite match of the night for me was the opening match, which was MJF and Darby Allin. Right. I thought that had a lot. That one really that was like the first one, obviously, that I watched, and I was like, wow, this is cool. So, but getting back to the Bryan Danielson match, he defeated Miro, which they talked about in another wrestling promotion. They even said this on commentary. He never bet Miro in another wrestling promotion. So that was kind of cool that he won the match, you know, that Bryan Danielson won the match against Miro. Very technically sound. Both of these guys, whenever I see them do moves that I think they're going to hurt them, I hope they're protecting themselves. But like these two guys, like when I'm watching, I'm like, oh, you know, you're going to fucking turn them into, you know, hey, I'm going to do a blue joke here. You're going to turn them into Chris Benoit. One of them is going to go home and kill their family. I just, you know. Their neck's going to crack, you know, or something like that. But
Jesus,
I'm just saying, you know, but, you know, it's just one of those things where I fear for their safety in that sense, but they know how they're doing the falls and they're taking it the way they're taking it, then good for them. But
absolutely.
But really, really, really good match. I really enjoyed it. And again, Bryan Danielson picked up that match that by pinfall defeating Miro. They said it was a pinfall, but I don't think it was a pinfall.
No, it was.
No, it wasn't. I'm almost positive Bryan Danielson made Miro not like tap out, but pass out.
I think he passed him out and then he pinned him, I believe.
Maybe. We'll have to roll the tape back, but either way, you know, Bryan Danielson won and he's gonna face the winner of the main event here. So that's going to be pretty cool to see, which, you know, we know who wins, but we can go back and talk about that at the end here.
Absolutely.
The next match, if you're all clear talking about this last match, we had Christian Cage and Jurassic Express defeat Sloper Click. Boy. And was this Adam Cole's first pay-per-view match?
Yep.
He has not lost his. I know he's had matches on television, but man, he has not lost a step.
No, he's good.
He is really good. I also like his little entrance, man. Looks a little familiar.
It looks super familiar.
Yeah, it's like.
But it's what's like over, and it's, you know, it's just a different type of music.
That's the thing.
Different promotions, same wrestler.
He knew what was over. He knew nothing was gonna, you know, changing himself in any way, like to that point, was gonna get him over any more or any less. And he can keep it. You know what I mean? It is what it is. And
well, here's what it was, Mikey.
Yeah.
He kept that because when he came out during All Out and when his music was going and the part of the match or part of the entrance when it does that boom thing.
Mm-hmm.
The audience, like, they knew it. They knew after since then. I think it was the very next night, too, when he came out, or the very next Dynamite when he came out. Right. When the audience did the whole boom thing, it's like, yeah, we got to keep going with this. If it's hot, you got to keep going with it.
And it is. And listen, props to Christian for being kind of the wave of the influx of these new wrestlers, but I feel like he gets overshadowed a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
Because he came and then, like, you know. Oh,
he's not Edge.
Yeah, okay. All right, we could say that. We could definitely say that. But man, you know, I don't know. This was your typical false count anywhere match. A lot of different spots. Personally, I like Jurassic Express.
Me too.
I think they're good.
I like Jungle Boy.
I do too. Jungle Boy Jack Perry. You know, I feel like that kid's got a lot of potential. He could have been a movie star, dude.
Really could have.
You know, I mean, you know, he's here, and maybe he'll be the opening that AEW needs to get more mainstream in the sense of, you know, the wrestlers in like television shows, and you know, he's got the chops from his father, rest in peace. You know, he could do stuff.
Absolutely.
And what's your take on the Hardy Boys? No, I'm sorry.
The Hardy Boys. That's the Young Bucks.
Yeah, that's what Jim Cornette calls.
See, I like the Young Bucks. I just like how they add the different type of flair to AEW when everything else kind of sometimes meshes and mashes together. Mm-hmm. They come out with their whole spiel. And the thing with the Young Bucks, which I don't want to emphasize too much about this because we have a lot more to cover. But the Young Bucks, if you don't just watch what they do on, you know, live television, you got to keep an eye out for their personalities through their YouTube channels and all that other stuff. That is another thing I think which adds a different flair to it for me, because those guys are fucking hilarious on YouTube. Mm-hmm. They do so many different things. I think it's called Being the Elite or something. They have their own channel on there where they like videotape themselves going from place to place and getting ready and just being idiots. Mm-hmm. That adds on to it, which I think they're doing right. So if you were to watch more of those videos and watch them get prepared for the pay-per-view that night or so on and so forth and kind of take it behind the scenes,
right,
that adds to why they're, you know,
they're over.
They're over, exactly.
Yeah, with that audience. Yeah, I would agree with you on that mm-hmm. point. But in the end, we, like you said, we had Christian Cage and Jurassic Express defeating Superclick via pinfall, via concerto that Jungle Boy was hesitant to give to one of the Jacksons.
It was Matt Jackson.
And you know, so that was another story. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They did that to him, and Jungle Boy is still like a good guy. He wasn't able to tap into that, but at the end of the match, he finally tapped into it. For better or for worse, you could kind of maybe see like a heel turn or something. I don't know if it would happen.
No, he's too baby right now to do that.
But I mean, like right there, it opened up the possibility of him. Wow, like you know, Christian gave him that edge to you know to move him to do that, and then you know maybe those two will have a match even. You know.
Yeah.
So there was that with that match. Was there anything you wanted to add to that match?
Mm-mm.
Okay. The next match was Cody Rhodes and Pac defeating Malakai Black and Andre El Idolo. I kind of skipped through some of this match.
Andrade El Idola.
is that the WAP match?
Idolo. Yeah.
But you know, Cody Rhodes, man, is he getting over for you?
It's tough. Right. He's got that show on right now with the Rhodes, and a lot of people like it, so I can see why. But Cody Rhodes reestablished himself going to New Japan once he was let go from the WWE. Mm-hmm. So he's still riding on that, in my opinion. But he's there. He's getting there for me. He has been there for me, but not like personally as a friend. But he's been there. Yeah, he's called me. No, he's been there for me, like watching AEW. He, like I said, he's that different sort of gear, no pun intended, in that proverbial car that we call AEW, that when some things are happening and it changes to him, it's like, okay, we kind of know what he's going to do when he comes out, but he sometimes changes it up, which makes it, you know, fun for him to watch. And you can't forget that he's a Rhodes guy.
Right.
And where his family, where the lineage comes from. So I like Cody Rhodes. Am I a mark for him? No. But
out of
I like
any
to
four
watch
of these guys, who would you be the most mark for?
I was a big mark for Andrade in NXT, but I like his persona. I like what he's doing now. Mm-hmm. It's something that I think would have went over super big in Lucha Underground.
Okay.
But not because of the name of the company, but because of what he's doing.
Right.
But he out of all those guys, the guy that has the most potential to make me mark out, probably Malakai Black. Oh,
okay. Okay. That's interesting. That's interesting. Well, we had the next match, we had CM Punk going against Eddie Kingston. And I think we all knew who was going to win this match. I just don't think we knew how the match was going to go. This was the first match of CM Punk's return where it seemed like CM Punk got a little bit more spent.
Right.
There was some color. There was a couple. There was actually a couple instances in a couple of these matches where guys got color. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple of instances in a couple of these matches where the guys almost did the same thing too, the biting.
Yeah,
that was interesting. I thought that was like going to be a theme. You could take it that it was kind of a theme that everybody was doing that, but I just thought that was interesting. And like again, I saw a lot of color from CM Punk on this match, to the point where, you know, there was maybe a 0.0000001. Maybe that I thought maybe Eddie Kingston would have won. But again, not knowing the guy, not knowing CM Punk and Eddie Kingston's history, you kind of delve into that. You knew a little bit more. This match probably meant more for you than it did for me. I was just happy to see CM Punk in a match. I don't know. I guess that for me right now, I would call myself a CM Punk mark. Where mm-hmm. everybody else was probably like, oh, fuck you. You know, Eddie Kingston all the way. Sorry, guy. I just wasn't in. I haven't really been watching the indies that much, so I really didn't know who he was.
I know him from AEW. I haven't really watched any of his stuff outside of that.
Okay.
But the way that this was built up, of course, which made it one of the most fun matches for me to get prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
So the one I was most hyped for was this one. But Eddie Kingston, I'm not sure if you watched any previews before the match or knew why the match was built. This Eddie Kingston had come out, and this was all over social media and YouTube and all that different types of stuff, where he had said that, you know, CM Punk, no one wants you here. You know, I'll be the guy with the balls here to say it to you, but no one wants you here. You know, you come back, you know, go away for another 7 years.
Right.
And he was saying stuff like that, which, you know, it kind of looked real at first. And that's what we look for. We strive for the realism, yeah. Even though the majority of us fans who are kind of, you know, educated on the wrestling and how it works and if it's a work or if it's a shoot. But Eddie Kingston, it seemed like some of that stuff was a shoot. And that he had went out there and said, you know, when I was wrestling matches and you guys were just sitting there laughing and, you know, saying, okay, this is a good time to use the bathroom or something. Or when you're out there, you know, you never gave me the advice that you gave everyone else. And I took offense to that and all that different types of shit. Mm. And he's like, hey, listen, Punk's, I think, I want to say he said this on Dynamite, but he's like, listen, it's not just me. It was the Samoa Joes too. It was the Bryan Danielsons as well. See, I almost pulled the JR there.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Bryan Danielsons as well. They none of us believed in you because we wanted you to believe in yourself first. All that different types of good on Punk to say that. That's why Punk's undisputed on the mic right now. And that's why I love when the mic's in his hands. That's why I think we're marks for him too. Right. But he was a good guy throwing jabs out there that got some boos. But then the audience after they're like, okay, yeah, I can see where that's, you know, fallible. But yeah, I mean, it's just it was a match that was very good. There was some color. There was some, like, I want to say there's like MMA moves in there, but Mike, I'm going to allow you to speak a little bit more on this match because there's some things that you noticed.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of scratched your head.
Well, yeah, because I was, okay, so again, this was me watching it and I noticed CM Punk, you know, I think he knew he was starting to get the boos and stuff like that. So I don't know if that was a call in the ring or if they just knew, like, during this match, this is going to happen. Like, people are going to be all for you, Eddie Kingston, even though like I'm a face and you're like the heel in the sense, I feel like it wasn't that match where it was like the Stone Cold Bret Hart thing where they changed.
Right. No.
Because they still stayed the same.
Exactly.
CM Punk was still the guy you're supposed to root for. And Eddie Kingston was supposed to be the guy, the underdog, but like, you know, where does he get off saying that to our hero that just came back after 7 years? Like,
right.
Go fuck off. He did the CM Punk thing, he did a John Cena thing, did the shoulder tackle, the two shoulder tackles into the backdrop, and then he put his hand up in the air, and people were booing, and then it wasn't until I realized that I was like, he just did a John Cena. Now people are gonna say that was a shot at WWE,
and no.
I 100% disagree.
He's playing the audience
and he is the John, he's saying that he's going to be in the John Cena role for this company. Like, I feel like that's what it was. I think I peeled back the lemon, or I'm sorry, the onion, as Shrek would say, a few layers deep, and he's just kind of giving himself, like, he's like kind of fortune telling the future and saying, you know, this is who I'm going to become thanks to you guys. Like, I'm going to be the John Cena.
Keep going.
Right. And, like, I just thought that was pretty freaking cool. Like, I thought that was neat, you know? And I don't know. I don't think I can get sick of CM Punk.
Me neither. And, but this is the thingy, though, Mikey, is that what you just said right there, that's what we like in wrestling. We like, and that's something that Vince would be like, don't you ever, ever do that again.
Right. Hulk Hogan wasn't in his company and somebody did the leg drop or something like that.
Yeah.
If it's about, unless you're doing that to make fun of, like, Pat Patterson or Joe Briscoe coming out there, two fat, overweight white men going out there and ripping their shirts off. Do not do that.
It's the comedic relief where it's like, oh my God, did he do that on purpose? No. We'll see. Oh my God, he's doing Cena's special move. Okay, there's something here. It's always making us think.
That wasn't Cena's special move. That was Cena's adrenaline.
Yeah. But you know what I mean, though, right?
No,
like,
I know.
They're doing that, and that's, like I said, that's one thing that AEW does so well that WWE doesn't do, because Vince is like, don't do that. Just go out there, stand, take a clothesline, and then put him over, and then you're good. There's no story. There's no talking, so to speak, with your movements that WWE doesn't do. So. I know, I dig that. And that's, like I said, another reason why I like AEW so much more than WWE and even NXT at this point, because AEW is doing stuff that was being done back in the 80s and the 90s, even right before the Attitude Era, and they're not going away from the formula.
No, they're not.
Now, mind you, if one of WWE's stars came to AEW, we always get pumped and excited, and they usually always go over. AEW needs to go away from that, which I think they are going to start doing that now, because I mean, they have enough talent now where they're good. But if you have somebody come in that was in WWE or NXT, and they start to go over in AEW, and they stop doing that, and then they lose and lose and lose, that could be AEW's type of stance, saying, hey, we don't need your people, even though they're great people and they're great talent, and we could definitely use their help here and make our talent the best and make our brand the best that it could be. But man, like, if they were just to show, like, say, for example, let me try to think of someone who was just let go from WWE. Like, I'm not going to say Braun Strowman because he's in Impact right now, but somebody that was just let go, that was a big name, not even Bray Wyatt. I'm not even going to talk about him. There was someone that was just let go that was a pretty big name.
Well, I mean, you could say Keith Lee.
Gargano. There we go.
Gargano got left?
I'm 100% sure that he was let go. Wow. No. I'm sorry. He was just on NXT last week. Maybe he did get let go. I'm not sure. But let's say one of the higher names that was let go, they were like, oh my God, they got rid of him too? Like, if you bring him into AEW, crush him. Bury him. Maybe piss him off to see if he could even come back and maybe come up with a different persona and just completely rock the socks off. But you can't keep having these WWE guys coming in and being like the guy and have them all over everything. You can't really count CM Punk because he's been out of the game for so long. But like a Daniel Bryan, a Bryan Danielson, you have him come in and he's winning these matches now. I don't really even count him as well either, because he was so well known on the indies. He's not using the Daniel Bryan gimmick. Moxley, same way. When he came in, him and Jericho were the main reasons why AEW was doing so successful in the beginning, because of Chris Jericho.
Right.
He's always been Chris Jericho in Japan, in WCW, in ECW. I mean, granted, he was like the Lion Tamer. The Lionheart. He was that persona as well, but I mean, he was always Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
He was John Moxley before he came to the WWE. So it's one of those instances where, yeah, you can make an argument that they're bringing in all these guys and they're getting over and yada, yada, yada. They also have had more time on television.
Right.
They made a name for themselves, and now they're going back to their old school roots and doing themselves. And some guys like Jericho, give him credit, he's always recreating himself. But yeah. Great match between Punk and Eddie Kingston. The ending was perfect. Right. Keeps Eddie Kingston still like you know, fuck you. I'm not going to shake your hand.
Right.
Go piss off and you don't look at me. I'm going to leave with my tail between my legs, but I'm not going to forget this motherfucker.
That sounded like him. Yeah, so that was that. That opening man too. I mean, that quick, like if he let the bell ring and he hit him then with his finisher there, I think that would have been it. You know, that would have been a quick CM Punk. That would have pissed off the crowd. That would have been good heat.
Yeah.
That would have been real good heat.
That would have been talked about too. Was
out for well over 3 seconds. But he hit him before. I mean, that's something he could say in his promos afterwards. But I don't know. Like, I felt like they, you know, for them to do one quick shocker, that would have been it.
Yep.
You know, and that would have, I don't know, that match wouldn't have helped or hurt Kingston if he won or if he lost, but it could have transitioned CM Punk if they're trying to do that. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? I know he's, you know, what CM Punk said, he's got a lot, you know, to talk about, you know, when he first came and he's like, I'm not going to get through it all tonight. So, like, you know, you can't leave CM Punk at the top for forever. Is it too soon to knock him down? No, I don't think so. I think it would have been like that. For this soon for him coming back, for them to have an upset like that, that could have been the Undertaker moment. The Undertaker moment at WrestleMania, they could have did that so quick. You know what I mean? The turnaround for Undertaker losing his undefeated streak was what? 21-1?
Ugh.
Right? That was 21 years?
And we're still talking about it.
Right. But how... they would have talked about that CM Punk loss last Saturday equally as much, and it didn't. And it took half, a quarter of Undertaker's career.
Here's the thing about Eddie Kingston, though: had they have him do that, that would have made this. It would have built up Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston. I know me and you personally don't know more about him as much as maybe some of our audience that listens to this show, but the Eddie Kingston that we know from AEW, who's just a brawler, and he's, you know, that New Yorker, and, like, he's got that, you know, like, that fuck you motherfucker, I'm like, you know, which we love.
Right.
I love Eddie Kingston because of his persona and how he is in the ring, and he's like me and you.
Right.
Nine-to-fivers
yeah.
that, like, we like to drink a beer, maybe eat a Coney hot dog. And, you know, go out there and kick some ass and just be sometimes funny on the mic because that's what he is.
Right.
That guy, if he was to beat CM Punk in that quick, like that quickly, but then CM Punk beats X next week, Y right. the next week, Z the next mm-hmm. week, like he'll have that above his head like, hey, I beat you, motherfucker. I beat you in like 5 seconds, dog. And, you know, like that could have been something where, you know, it builds him up in the future where – who knows, Mikey? We might see Eddie Kingston go for the AEW championships in the future.
Right.
Or the TNT, if that's like the new Intercontinental, maybe go for that in the future. But I personally think that if you build – Eddie Kingston's build-upable.
Right, right. So, I would have even fell back on, you know, how they had The Undertaker have those matches for 21 years at WrestleMania where he was undefeated. Mm-hmm. They could have went a different way in AEW, and every year at Full Gear they could fucking just have an Eddie Kingston CM Punk match. That would right. be something different, you know what I mean? Like
they
like,
could
for as long as those two could go, that's always going to be a match.
Right.
One might get the one up on the other, or the other one, you know, they could be going through a feud. And CM Punk could be having a belt, some, you know, it could be something else. And then just Eddie Kingston comes through the door and be like, motherfucker, it's
ass kicking time.
And not even for the belt. It's just, that's just, that would be their grudge, you know?
It'd yeah. It's like the Yankees and the Red Sox.
Right. They'll just meet up.
Yep.
You know, is it for anything? Hey.
No.
Bragging rights for the year.
Yeah. Hey, who won last year, motherfucker? Yeah, I did.
But who won 2 years ago, man?
Hey, remember back in 2001 when you exactly. said I'd be a nobody? Well, this nobody kicked you Chicago-style eating ass. Wait, what? But, hey, we're done with this match. If we talk about the next match, let's not waste more than 10 seconds on it because this was a bona fide snoozer for me.
Wow, I would agree with you. We had the
interview. And I hate to say it.
Ethan Page, Scorpio Sky, Junior Dos Santos, Andrea Orlovsky and
Orlovsky.
Orlovsky and Dan Lambert via pinfall. Nothing against the crew. I mean, it was just a 5-on-5. I said this to the missus. It was just a 5. She wanted to see. This was another match she wanted to watch. And I said, maybe we'll watch it later. So this was a 5-on-5 clusterfuck.
This was
your typical manager match too.
Yep.
Usually I'm, you know, I'm a fan for it.
Interesting.
I like Dan Lambert. Yeah. I think that would be, if Jim Cornette could swallow his pride, this would have been Jim Cornette.
Absolutely.
But you know, Dan Lambert, he's all right, man. I get it.
Do you know who Junior Dos Santos and Andre Arlovsky are?
Those guys are UFC fighters.
Yep.
Yeah. And they're what? Undefeated?
Not or undefeated. Two-time
something belt
winners? They're champs for sure.
So like that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I like
how they're like big money at them, like did Conor McGregor.
No, I don't think they even threw Conor McGregor money because he wasn't in WWE.
Oh, not Conor McGregor. Who the fuck is that?
Conor? Ronda Rousey.
No, the other dude.
I don't know. Oh no! Tyson Fury.
That's who.
He's a boxer.
Whatever. It's all the same.
But, yeah, it's all the same. Brock Lesnar?
You're all punching and kicking in a ring. I don't know.
You can't kick in boxing. But, Junior Dos Santos and Andrew Alaska. I'm not sure if they're getting paid big bucks. Mm-hmm. But it's good to see them in AEW because it's better than seeing them in WWE. Okay. Now, these guys are great UFC. They're great mixed martial artists, but this match wasn't their match.
It was stiff because these guys, this was their first match. So this is a hard match when you have three guys that are green that you can't throw them in the ring in the middle because you're going to have to watch them. And then when you watch them, the more you watch them, the more you notice like, ooh,
oof.
You know what I mean? And now I'm not, exactly. I always like, I don't know, when I would imaginary wrestle managers on like WWE games, I'd give them more of a fighting chance. I'd give them a little bit more like maneuvers and shit like that.
Right.
Whenever they throw a manager in a wrestling like ring, they don't seem to fight well. You know what I mean? And I get that too. But I mean, like, listen, if they know they have to do a match, there has to be some kayfabe like belief that they did some training. They're going to go in a ring and get their ass kicked. You know what I mean? Like, they'd have to at least take a couple of...
Like, it was pretty much Jericho versus Lambert.
Yeah, that's
the whole build-up was. But it's just like Chris Jericho,
super long,
Hall of Famer.
Right.
Like, wrestling god. Right. No offense to JBL. But, like, Jericho's put his time in. Mm-hmm. We know who he is. He's the first undisputed champion in WWE.
So are you saying this should have probably been maybe a lumberjack match between Jericho and Lambert?
And
then it breaks down for like 10-15 minutes, and then you get that ending that's what everybody was paying to see anyway, was Jericho.
I know they're trying to go for that fight that they had where Sammy Guevara was getting hit by the cart. They're trying to go for that sort of thing over and over and over again. It's one of those things, Mikey, where it's like I don't think they're playing it out too much, but well, it's
when did
like
when did Sammy Guevara get hit by a cart?
This was like pay-per-views way long ago. No,
but I mean, like, did they do that again this one?
No, they didn't. But that, like, they're having too many of these like Minneapolis
street fights. You're 5-on-5s and shit.
Yeah, you're fives on fives. We don't. I mean, if it's gonna be a clusterfuck like that, it is what it is. But, like, I'm okay. Like, the Inner Circle needs to go back for a little bit, and we don't see them, but maybe see them. They put their time in, they put their service in, and we thank them for their service
in
making AEW very entertaining for the time they have. I think it's time to change some things, and the story, not the story, but, like, the outlook of what pay-per-views are going to be like, or they got to change it up a little bit with that. We appreciate the Inner Circle, and maybe they could be like a parody in some things, but like maybe have them come back for like a pay-per-view where it's, you know, like not a Survivor Series-esque type of thing, but like a, hey, you get your best five guys, we'll get our best five guys, and, you know, let's see who you got. And then it's the Inner Circle versus, let's say, the mega super whatever the fuck, whatever anyone calls themselves, and it'll be a team of people that have worked together, yada yada yada, build it up, which they could do.
Like that could end up being like the inner circle could end up being the AEW's like mascot in a way.
Right, exactly.
That's so like strange. DX. Right. That's so strange that you think that way with them, because I'll listening to various different outlets, other podcasts, other things like that. And there seems to be that notion, just like with JR, I won't sugarcoat it, because I'm on either fence either way. If they do something great, good. If they don't, you know, whatever. It seems like they're getting sick of Jericho. Is that a consensus that you might be hearing?
No.
Okay. All right.
No, I think Jericho needs a break though. He's put his time in, mm-hmm. and like I said, he was very entertaining and very good throughout the time, and that's coming from Japan as well, from him going over there as Le Champion. He wasn't Le Champion over there, but he was, you know, the Hellraiser type of gimmick that he had going on. It was, like I said, Jericho's the man, and he'll always be the man. He's the guy that whenever he comes out, people are going to lose their shit. He's always recreating something and getting the audience involved, as always. Right. But they need right now, if they're going to do Inner Circle type of stuff, they need to have like how DX was with the New Age Outlaws and this, that, and the other thing. And have it where you have so-and-so doing this. They need to put more females into these factions like that.
Yeah.
You know, if you have Wardlow and not Wardlow, I'm sorry. If you have Jack Hager. God, I'm JR today.
JR.
They have Jake Hager and Sammy Guevara, and they're going against, let's say, if Wardlow and what the fuck was his name? Perfect 10. They have those guys win the tag team championships, and then they say, hey, we still have a dispute we need to fight about. And, you know, we still 1-1 right now. So right. Let's do so
you
this.
You have the major, you're trying to say you have that major faction, but you mm-hmm. still have the small teams out of it. And you have Jericho
exactly.
be the guy that would go for the big belt. You could keep Guevara for the middle class belt. And then, mm-hmm. like you said, if they could throw some female into the inner circle.
Right.
Like a Britt Baker or,
I think Britt Baker would be with the Super Click. But that's the thing though, too, Mike, is that they have all these factions that we didn't need that Inner Circle match with them. And granted, it was a good build up, but like I said, the match for me was lackluster because I just wasn't into it. But the build up between it here and there, it was kind of like cringy at some points. Right. But it was one of those things where the Super Click and the Jurassic Express was maybe they're just building something up for the next pay per view, because the Super Click is getting so over right now. And going into what we're going to say next about a debut, right. Maybe we see more people joining forces with some people, and then that way we could see a certain group taking over. At this point, that's just more storylines, right. Which is perfect, which is what we need, because we don't want it to be bland. But maybe Inner Circle could go away for a little bit. Maybe we could bring the Pinnacle back out as a thing. And because I haven't really heard much about them anymore, but then have them against a Super Click, and then that'll be the next 5-on-5 or something if they're going to continuously do this. But yeah. But Mikey, take us into the next.
Well, thing. Here's the other thing. I think that's nothing against the people that were involved in the match, but it's one of those things that happens on your podcast from time to time. You just kind of overlook certain information.
And
when you overlook some information, it just doesn't get into the notes. And when it doesn't get into the notes, you end up kind of vamping to look it up so you can get through it. And it's one of those things that
you're doing right now. And
So it was Dr. Britt Baker versus, who was it?
Dr. Britt Baker versus.
Did not show up.
Damn it. It wasn't Red Velvet.
No.
Hold on, let me look it up.
Yeah, while you're doing this that, is sad. Nothing against either two.
Yeah, it was. It was Britt Baker versus you know what? You know what? Sheesh. I think it's because we went off of CBS's notes. And
don't be peeling back
the curtain here. Yo, Coyton, though, proverbial Coyton. Damn, dude. This is embarrassing. I love Britt Baker too. It wasn't Penelope Ford, was it? No. All right, let's peel back the old curtain.
Well, we're peeling back the old curtain. We would like to thank our viewers and everyone involved.
Tay Conti. Very actually, and I'm really upset with myself for not remembering this because I did watch this match. Tay Conti, it's a funny thing. She's and I'll say this as a male, that she's a very attractive woman in wrestling.
Well, you can't say that.
But listen, I said that respectfully. Oh, and if you say that, you say respectfully, it's okay.
All right.
But no, Tay Conti's a very attractive woman who's also very good in the ring, very talented.
Mm-hmm.
She just didn't do what it needed to. She didn't do what it takes. I can't even talk. She didn't have what it takes to beat Britt Baker this match. I don't think it would have been good if she would hand the belt over to Tay Conti at this match. There wasn't enough buildup.
Right.
Tay Conti is the equivalent, in my opinion, is Carmella in WWE.
Oh, okay.
There can do what she needs to do, can get over, but Tay Conti is another women's wrestler who's very good, is good on the mic, great interviews. She could be another Mandy Rose in NXT, but she's one match away from being like Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa with adding a little color to her match because she's so pretty.
Right.
And same thing with Britt Baker. Britt Baker, I don't care what anyone says. Britt Baker is phenomenal. She's the best women's wrestler in wrestling today, I personally think. And I'm a Britt Baker mark. But she can be like a Britt Baker if she just gets bloodied in a match.
Okay.
Because of how sometimes when a wrestler is too pretty, you kind of steer away from, okay, damn, she's really good in the ring. A lot of people, not everyone, because there's select fans that, you know, I respect her. She's a woman in the ring, and she deserves my respect. Yeah, I mean, everyone deserves your respect until said otherwise.
Right. But you're right. But there are, like, if you see pretty people and they're just there because
Terry Runnels,
right.
Tori Wilson. We never looked at those guys as wrestling, and it's because of the way the WWE has, you know, branded our heads and our brains. That if you're pretty, you're not going to be a good wrestler. You're not going to be entertaining.
Boy, what about a Sable Paul Bearer feud? That would have been great,
right?
Those two hated each other.
But
they had a bra and panties match.
like Tay Conti, she did the same thing with Britt Baker. I mean, Britt Baker is just an all around just a beast in the ring. But she's another person that she's got the looks, but she also could pull off a really good match every time she's in there. And Tay Conti, it was a good match. It was a good match that I think was
think
one of the top matches. I don't think so. But if that would have been one of the matches and they would have taken away that five-man match,
right.
I think this would have been a pay-per-view that would have kept just going and going and going.
Peeling back those notes, clearly it was overlooked for CBS Sports, which is interesting, but I mean, I thought, you know, it was in a good spot. The only thing I thought was this was the only match on the main card that was a woman's match, which AEW is not trying to do a woman's movement like WWE is, or maybe they are. I don't know. It just seems like, you know, I think their women's division is very shallow.
It
you
is.
Know what I mean, you don't have your Becky Lynch's, your oh my God, your Charlotte Flair's. I mean, soon probably you'll have Charlotte Flair. That's not saying anything. You know, but just like, you know, Becky Lynch, Sasha, I mean, their women's division in WWE is deep.
Right.
And in AEW, it's, you know, it's
getting there.
It's getting there, but, you know.
It's getting just, there.
But, you know, again, it takes time. These are growing pains, and we'll see where this company is going to be around for a while.
Everyone keeps forgetting that these guys are still relatively new. So, but they're doing a lot more with what they have than what WWE is doing. That's why a lot of people really like watching AEW.
Right.
But we digress.
Right.
Good match. Britt Baker won.
Getting back to the next segment, we had Jay Lethal. He made his AEW debut. Lethal confirmed that he is now All Elite and answered Sammy Guevara's open challenge for the TNT Championship, suggesting that the match will be Wednesday night on Dynamite. Guevara returned to the entrance ramp to accept the challenge. Now, Jay Lethal, man, ROH had a little bit of a fallout. So all those contracts are up in the air.
Yep.
But I guess Jay Lethal was done and he came to AEW and he's going to be All Elite and we're going to see where he goes. Now, do you think it's wise for someone like a Jay Lethal to come to AEW when there is just there's an influx of wrestlers already here?
Not at all. I think it's a great move for him because as same thing with WWE, a lot of guys are being let go from WWE specifically for that reason that let us, make us keep you.
We don't know what WWE's reason is for releasing all these. I mean,
it's money.
But no, we can assume it's money, even though that it's, you look at their quarterly earnings, and WWE's earning a lot of money.
What have you done for me lately?
I mean, that is another assumption, though, too. I mean,
we don't know. We're taking guess here of why. But I mean, from just a basic standpoint, guys like Jay Lethal, guys like CM Punk, guys like Daniel Bryan, guys like Adam Cole, what have you done for me lately? Go in there and make us keep you. And that's what I feel like anyone, even WWE, because you're not going to get rid of Stone Cold when he's at his highest. Hell, you're not going to get rid of Stone Cold if he comes back right now. The Rock, you're not going to get rid of them. These guys are bona fide, peanut butter and jelly. Right. They're guys that get in the ring that you're like, damn, you go out of your way to watch them. If you know that Stone Cold or The Rock's going to be on there, same thing with CM Punk. CM Punk has that right now.
Yeah,
he has that quote unquote it factor that it's like when he came back, everyone tuned in for that Rampage because I believe it was the first Rampage. I could be wrong.
Yeah,
but and it was in Chicago, right. And there was already some sort of a blur. But it's like, man, I don't think he's going to come back because he said not. But guess what? That little blurb got out there, Mikey. And what did everyone do? It was one of the highest watched wrestling events, one of the highest watched wrestling shows of all time. And there's millions upon millions and millions of views still going to this day from his entrance coming back. And it was probably one of the loudest pops ever. So,
yeah, I mean, you're not going to get that nowadays with anybody, I mean, you'll get the quick pop from a Brock Lesnar, but people get tired of that. CM Punk's on a different level. CM Punk is still like those old, like a Rock or a Stone Cold or an Undertaker. Those guys come back.
Yep.
The AEW is building a foundation in sense that, like, you're going to throw in a Darby Allin with a Sting. You're going to mesh them together. Then when Sting is gone, well, Darby Allin is like, wow, okay, look who they made,
right?
From who they threw next to them. FTR is the same way with Tully Blanchard. You have Tully Blanchard there, like, oh my freaking god, Taz. I'll say that with Taz, like, holy shit. His whole freaking group with all his people, like Taz goes and you just have a foundation built.
Yep.
Based off of,
building for the future.
Right. Right. WWE's not doing that.
Mm-mm.
And there was a conversation not to pull from Jay Lethal's, debut and what he's going to be doing. But there was a conversation I had with the missus and she said, when I watch AEW, it seems like they know what they're doing more than what WWE is doing. And I said, yes, I said. But also, I feel like, personally, me now, not the missus, AEW is like watching NASCAR and waiting for that car to fucking crash. Because it's going to be spectacular. Because, yes, they have control in the ring of what they're doing, but there could be a mistake and it could be interesting. WWE is just too trained.
Yep, and it'll be talked about.
Right.
And it always comes back to what Eric Bischoff had said. When you have them wanting to know what's going to happen next, you pull in your audience and it gives you like, okay, I got to tune in and see what's going to happen. You throw that little bit of a bait out there, it's going to pull them into what the hell is going to happen next.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, I mean, he's right. And AEW does that a lot better than WWE, and they're doing it way better. That's another reason why a lot of people are tuning into it. But
it's really funny, though, too, just to talk about Eric Bischoff and to talk about Jim Cornette. I feel like they've swapped sides now. If you listen to any of Corny's recent podcasts, he is praising AEW, and Bischoff is deterring AEW.
It's like it's a work or something, yeah, huh?
Yeah, it feels like it, man. It feels like everybody's in it. You know what I mean? This war is just going to go under our.
They're all underground in meeting at the United Nations, and they're like, "Hey, WWE needs to go down. Let's do this."
But what's not pulling the wool over our eyes was our main event, and that was Adam Page against Kenny Omega. And this was for the AEW World Championship. And this is our last match. And we'll talk about it a little bit here. But first of all, who did you think was going to take the pony before we knew who was going to win, Jiggler? Who did you think was going to win?
Because of the outcome of that Miro-Brian Danielson match, I thought it was going to be Kenny Omega.
Wow.
Because of the match that they had, and I thought they were going to continue to build off that, but I guess not.
Wow, I didn't even think about it like that. I didn't know. Looking at this, I didn't know. I heard inklings. I am not a huge, again, Kenny Omega fan, just like I'm not a huge Young Bucks fan. But but man, you know, Don Callis does it for me. He's like,
I know
he's like a poor man's Paul Heyman.
He really is.
It's good though.
He's Cyrus.
Yes, yes. But it was entertaining. You know, he's making up for all the naysayers that, you know, didn't give AEW a chance, at least. And yeah, you know, something about Hangman Adam Page that I like. I can't put my finger on it, but he's pretty.
Maybe
cool.
It's that cowboy shiznit.
Cowboy shiznit. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Character, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Different, you know. We've had cowboys in wrestling. I mean, you know.
But this is like.
But he's different. He's a different cowboy.
A modernized cowboy.
Yeah, right. And the whole entrance was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Him coming down on the horse, and then them having the kind of the history blurbs going up in the background. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
And like they went pretty much everywhere with this match where they were supposed to go, you know, you didn't know who was going to win. I, you know, again, I thought it could go either way. You, from actually thinking of who won the number one contendership match, kind of, that's how everybody might've thought.
Mm-hmm.
So they probably just did a swerve for the smark, if you will.
Yep. That's what I thought too.
Do you think they called an audible, or do you think they just knew that this was going to be it? They're giving Kenny Omega a break.
I think they knew this was going to happen immediately. Even when he came back and he won in Philly, that Casino Royale match. I thought that was, I didn't think he was going to win that match in Philly, but I mean, when he came back, Kenny Omega had the belt, it made sense, but I didn't think they were going to put the belt on him just yet. I thought they were going to build up a little bit more, but I could see the payoff and why they did it then and there and why they did what they did. But
yeah,
good match overall, though.
Overall, I thought so too. It was very entertaining. It wasn't one of those matches. There were a few of these matches, and I won't say whose matches. Well, we all both know which one match was. Just you're kind of looking at your time going, well, how long is this going? The one match we could both agree on that was like that was that 5-on-5.
Absolutely.
That ended a little bit quicker. You know what I mean? Especially when you have two or three green horns in there. You just want to get your shit in and make it look good. And yeah, if everybody else didn't put their shit in, then at least you're not hurting the green guys anymore by having them there and just standing there. Because unfortunately, not to talk about the 5-on-5 match again, I was looking in the background, not watching what was going on in the ring. I was just seeing the other people just kind of stand there and being like, you're not doing it right. You know what I mean? Like, if I was booking
this, do something,
keep them busy, you know, distract them right and all this stuff. Even the, I don't know how much of the Luchasaurus Jungle Boy match you watch, but that's one reason why I kind of, I felt like the Young Bucks kind of threw Luchasaurus into a corner when they kind of had their 2-on-1 against him and they both had a chair. And I felt like, I don't know whose fault it was, but it just looked like somebody missed a cue when you saw it. And I hope it wasn't the Young Bucks trying to get like Luchasaurus messed up. I think Luchasaurus is still kind of green too.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think it could be that. I just think it could be like in that match. There was a scene or a part in it where they both came at him with the chair, and he didn't know who to step at first, and you just kind of saw the hesitation. And then that kind of thing, you should just kind of go. You shouldn't hesitate. You know, I know it's easier for me to say.
If you die, you die.
Right. But it was just one of those things where, I kind of saw that. And that was, but no, I didn't see that at all in this main event. I think they all
there was high spots, low spots. It was a very well told story. And like I said, I was really looking forward to that in the Kingston Punk match the whole night.
So could you tell me, could you give me a little bit of information of why the Young Bucks came out and just kind of looked and didn't do anything to help Omega? Could you fill in a little bit of the backstory there for me and for maybe some people that might have not got why they just came out and watched?
I think there's going to be some sort of I know Kenny Omega, I was going to mention this before, but I waited till the main event.
Yeah.
But Kenny Omega's hurt. Kenny Omega's been wrestling with a bad shoulder, so I think they're going to probably turn on him come Dynamite. And Adam Cole is going to be like the new face of the Elite. And then who knows what's going to happen. I think Kenny Omega is going to go away for a little while because he's hurt. But then I think if they do it right, they'll have him come back and they'll either have him beat up the Young Bucks or who knows. They might have him come back and then be like, hey, you know, Bull Club, baby, yada, 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 Elite, we're Elite, and then do whatever they're doing. But I think they're going to turn on him, probably come Dynamite, as always, as they always do when there's an injured guy. And maybe he comes back as a good guy. Maybe, and it's just throwing this out there because of just the New Japan type of storylines that they had going on, they might bring back the how the fuck is their name? My buddy will bust my balls if I forget about this, but the Golden Lovers, I think. And it's between him and Okada in Japan. I think if they bring him back, that would be – that opens up doors for everything and so much more. So, like I said – AEW's doing right because they have a revolving door of what they could do in the business and then put some people on the back burner, have them take some breaks and then come back in. It's like basketball. You have your starters and then you have you guys on the bench. And then when they come in for a couple, you know, for a few minutes, two or three minutes, have your starters come back in. But everyone's equally, you know, good. Right. Some great, but some great people get injured, and which happened with Kenny Omega here, but overall, very good pay-per-view. Yeah. Not as good as All Out for me. All Out was probably one of the best pay-per-views I've seen in a long time. But, pretty good, though.
Yeah, I would definitely catch it if you get a chance to, if you wanted to, you know, buy it in again or if they're showing it somewhere. Watch it again. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of shit that's happening, you know, that I think you need to watch it a couple times just to get all the shit in, you know?
Exactly.
I don't know if it's just me and you and we're just getting old, but I feel like, you know, some parts of me, I just zone in and zone out when I'm watching.
Yeah, I think it's our old age.
It is what it is. But all things considered, if we were giving it a thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle, what would you say, Jay Glow?
Three quarter of the thumb up.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll meet you that other three quarters of the way, and I'll just have my thumb straight up. It was pretty good. We are hoping that this was a quick episode. We're not entirely sure.
Well, this episode's been almost an hour and a half. If not more. But hey, there's no commercial breaks. Big shout out to our sponsors. We'll do that right now. Our one and only, blushing Brad to be. Wow. Loco Coffee, actually, I appreciate those guys so much because they hook me up with my favorite coffee all the time. I have an order coming in very shortly that I used a fantastic discount on, which is Wrestling WE. Use that at your checkout. You'll get 10% off. 10% with the way that the world is right now and how much things are, that's a good couple bucks taken off your order there. Give it a try. Even if you want to just try a 6-pack or a 12-pack, give it a go. Really good coffee. You could also find it in Wegmans that I've noticed in the area. If you have a Wegmans in your area, or simply just go online, use our code. You can't use our code at Wegmans, but if you just want to try it, give it a go. But
online, Loco, if we use our 10% discount code, that pretty much covers the shipping.
Yeah. So if you don't want to pay for shipping, you know, go for it. And I'll tell you what, if you're a coffee connoisseur like me and Mikey are here, it's fantastic. He's a coconut guy. I'm a maple guy. So it really tickles our fancy. But yeah, give it a go. They sponsor all of our shows here, and we appreciate them for that. And that's really it. You could always hit up our Facebook page. We're getting close for our Facebook page, which has come a long way. Not a lot of people use Facebook anymore except for boomers, but we're close to 300 new members in the page. So feel free to join up. We have a lot of funny shit that we share on there, and a lot of just guys and girls that talk about, you know, wrestling and what we like about it, what we remembered from it, and stuff that makes us laugh, stuff that makes us think. It's a good group to be around. And the same thing goes for our Twitter page, which really Mikey Dangerously helms a lot. That's wrestling and whatever on there, which is at wrestling and WE. Give us a shout out on there or shoot us a message. And, you know, we'd love to start having more people interact on the show. But for right now, we're really just talking wrestling as always. And eventually we'll start talking about the whatever portion more often. But yeah, that's really all I got, Mikey. How about you?
No, I'm pretty much good. If there's anything else anybody wants to reach us out at too on our individual Twitters, be sure to give us just individual likes as well. Individual follows, I should say. I'm at M Dangerously, and you're at J Glow.
At Johnny Glow.
Johnny
Glow. At Johnny Glow with two W's. Feel free to reach me on there, or really more so just the Facebook page. Because yeah, we are not the Facebook page, the Twitter page. So we really man the helm there a lot. Yeah, so.
And if you have any, like, you know, interesting questions you want us to answer, we could always do a little question and answer portion.
Absolutely.
We'll see. And as for next week's show, hey, we'll see what's going around, and we'll talk about it all. Because yeah, this is Wrestling Whatever, and we'll see you up there.